You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In December, community radio activists in the U.S. hula-hooped in front of the offices of the National Association of Broadcasters, a powerful commercial radio lobby. They were asking the NAB to stop making them jump through hoops to get a law mandating the creation of new non-commercial radio stations. The following week, community radio activists won a victory when the U.S. Senate passed the Local Community Radio Act. The new law will enable community groups, churches, and schools across the U.S. to establish new, non-commercial, low-power FM radio stations in their cities and towns. Jonathan Lawson is a longtime media activist with Reclaim the Media, a Seattle-based media justice organization, and he joins me this morning from Seattle. Hello, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Now, congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great victory for community radio advocates across the U.S., and we're very pleased that so many more people will be able to become community radio broadcasters as a result of this law.
Now, what are the basic features of a low-power FM license?
A low-power FM license is a classification of small community radio license. The power will top out at 100 watts. That's enough to cover a small town or a big part of a dense urban area. The stations will be both in cities and in rural areas across the country, and will be all non-commercial, so community organizations as well as schools be eligible to apply for these licenses.
Now, our transmitter here at Co-op Radio is currently 5,000 watts. What sort of broadcast range does a 100-watt transmitter have?
100 watts is sufficient to cover town and its sort of surrounding area. And since this is really all about local voices and local radio, these small transmitters will be incredibly useful tools for organizing, for education, and for supporting the culture of a region.
So in terms of kilometers, or I guess you think in miles down there, what kind of a range have you got?
That varies quite a bit because of the other issues in terms of how high you get your transmitter off the ground or whatever. But so I hazard to take a stab at that. It depends on the terrain. But certainly the surrounding area of a town can be covered without any difficulty. There already are a fair number of these low-power FM stations out there, and so there's already quite a range out there of coverage.
Can you give us some examples? As you said, there are a number of low-power stations already in existence. What kind of ways have these been used?
Well, my favorite example is a town about an hour's drive outside of the state capital of Oregon. It's being run by a group of farm workers, of Latin American farm workers, a union, that were totally shut off the airwaves in their area before, not only without access to any Spanish language radio, but also there are a number of other Latin American languages that are spoken by these migrant farm worker populations. They had tried in the past to actually buy airtime on their local commercial radio affiliate, but they were kicked off the air because they were using the radio for union organizing. And their response to that was, of course we're using it for union organizing. That should be our right. They were able to get one of the earlier batch of low-power FM licenses when the FCC was able to provide these on a kind of a test basis, but not all across the country. And since they launched a few years ago, they've been using that for a whole variety of purposes. They've been able to let members of their community come on the air with music from different regions, but also to talk about union politics and local civic affairs and very practical things about how to, you know, make their way in the world in their town. It's becoming a very important informational resource and a cultural resource for that community.
Now, what have the barriers been up until now to community stations getting low-power FM licenses?
Well, in 1996, the laws about radio ownership changed dramatically in the U.S., allowing big companies like Viacom and Clear Channel to expand their holdings of commercial radio stations a lot, which drove up the value of commercial stations and made it a lot more difficult for somebody to say, hey, I want to have a radio station and to be able to inexpensively get a frequency and start broadcasting. It was really basically impossible. So this the push to create a low-power FM service was really in response to that. 10 years ago, the FCC said, yeah, we agree there ought to be a way for small local communities to have a non-commercial station. But the idea was fought very vociferously by the broadcasting lobby in the U.S., and they successfully hobbled that service for most of the past 10 years. So there were only a few stations that were allowed to exist. The large broadcasters' claim was that these small stations would create interference with the much larger stations, and that the much larger stations were the real stations that ought to be protected from these small stations. Because the broadcasting lobby is so powerful in Washington, D.C., that argument actually carried the day for a number of years, and it was only through a really huge amount of grassroots organizing across the country, led by groups like the Prometheus Radio Project and Reclaim the Media, that we were able to turn the tables and get this law passed to expand LPFM.
It's a pretty far-fetched argument that they were making there.
I agree. It's sort of like saying, well, my iPod is interfering with this giant stereo system I'm standing next to. It was quite crazy on its surface, but that's the way politics works in Washington, D.C., I guess.
Now, you've been involved in critiquing commercial media and advocating for alternative media for many years. What do you see as the significance of this victory?
Well, we're ecstatic. This is a huge breakthrough for local voices on the radio airwaves. And radio, sometimes we hear comments from people saying, well, radio is really kind of dead as a medium. And, of course, that's quite the opposite of the truth. Radio is still the most ubiquitous form of mass communications and the cheapest. Everyone has a radio. Everyone has multiple radios. So this is a tremendous opportunity for folks to get on the air and learn how to do radio and learn how to do use the communication tools of radio for a whole range of things, including cultural work and civic engagement and so forth. So this is just a huge victory.
I guess the National Association of Broadcasters wouldn't have been fighting so hard for 10 years to preserve their little piece of turf if radio was actually dead.
That's right. And there are other technologies that are still being fought over around the internet, the net neutrality issues, which I know are fights that are taking place in Canada as well as the U.S. But this was a significant one for radio.
What kind of challenges do you think lie ahead now that this opportunity has opened up?
Well, much more pragmatic challenges. Now the work will be for groups like Reclaim the Media and Prometheus Radio Project will be to figure out how to provide assistance to all the community organizations around the country that will be the best place to make use of this new law. So we will be talking to organizations in our different regions and saying, hey, look, here's this opportunity. If you understand it and want to make sure that people are able to apply for frequencies and understand what the power of radio can be for the next several years. The FCC, for their part, is very enthusiastic about the new law, and they're ready to begin licensing stations as soon as they can. This process will take a couple of years, I guess.
And are there plans for a station in Seattle?
We don't know. One of the things that the law did is it opened up a whole bunch of new frequencies for potential LPFM stations. If you think about the FM radio dial as the teeth of a comb, there are rules that specify how closely together you can have different radio stations. And the new law means that there are many more teeth of the comb that can be used by low-power stations. But figuring out, we did some research a while back that did indicate that there could potentially be a few more stations wedged into urban markets, including Seattle. But whether that's actually going to work out will be for engineers to figure out. There are a couple of stations in Seattle that have been broadcasting as web radio stations and doing really amazing work, including the Voice of Vashon and a great station called Hollow Earth Radio, which just celebrated their fourth anniversary as a web station. And they want nothing more than to be on the air. So we're going to try to help them figure out if that's possible.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me this morning, and good luck with the work that's going to happen now to get this thing more publicized and get it happening.
Thank you very much, and good luck to CFRO with its transmitter swap coming up.
Bye-bye, Jonathan.
All right, take care.
I've been speaking with Jonathan Lawson. Jonathan is a longtime activist with Reclaim the Media, a Seattle-based media justice organization.